So many of you, I recognize, have come on retreats many, many times. Still not enlightened after so many years. It's good to see you back again. So all of those who have been here before, you know the routine. For those here on the first time, we welcome you here. And I welcome you to our facilities. And the retreats which I give, if you've never been on one of my retreats before, just acknowledge the fact that you've all come from busy lives. Many of you have travelled from overseas to get here, including myself. I just flew in yesterday from Indonesia and Singapore. So there'll be some tiredness inside of you. And so recognize that tiredness. Don't fight it. Make peace, be kind, and be gentle with the feelings in your body. And that way that you'll find over the long retreat of 9 days, by caring for the body in the first couple of days, then you'll find your body will be more cooperative later on. But it's not just the practicalities of having to deal with maybe a tired body. It's also the very attitude which you bring into the meditation. An attitude which tries to fight the body, control tiredness through willpower, is a sort of attitude which will never work in meditation. You'll find the more you try and fight and control, the bigger your sense of self and your ego becomes. And there is a great connection between the path of letting go, making peace, giving up this sort of this restlessness which starts to make plans and make strategies, to give all that up, is also linked to the fact of letting go of one's sense of self. So instead of being the driver of one's vehicle, one becomes a passenger. Instead of being someone always in charge of things, one just becomes invisible. And as one disappears more and more, not only is one discovering the truth of anatta, non-self, but you're also just finding a beautiful path of peace. Of all the five hindrances, the biggest one is you. So please get out of the way of this meditation and just let it happen. And the prime way of letting go in meditation is just being kind. Because compassion and kindness is, you know, as I said in that book, is to be able to open the door of your heart with unconditional acceptance to whatever is in front of you. In the same way that a mother loves her child, even though the child can be pooing in its pants, can be crying. I know all about sort of crying children. For the whole journey from Singapore to Perth, as Gordon will attest, because he was in the same plane, there were so many kids crying and wailing all the journey. I don't know, I'd be tested with my compassion if I had a kid like that. But you see the mothers always caring and being kind. In the same way that as meditators we can accept every moment with such kindness. Caring for our body and caring for our mind. Caring for this moment like a mother loves her child. So even if this moment screams and wails and causes all sorts of problems for us, we're kind to it. We open the door of our heart to it. We're with it rather than against it. In other words, we let it be rather than fighting it. And that part of letting go, of letting be, of being with things, whether it's with your body in those first few days, being with things and with kindness, with compassion, if you need to have a rest, take a rest. If you need to cough, cough. If you need to scratch, scratch. Because when we work with our body rather than against it, we find the body actually relaxes. And when the body relaxes and there's a sense of comfort and ease in our body, it makes meditation so much easier. And also you'll find it even makes sleep so much easier. I was telling somebody, I think 2 nights ago in Singapore, that they were having trouble sort of sleeping at night. And one of the reasons is that, you know, the body becomes very tense. There's a certain tightness in the body. I'm aware enough, I can see that tightness if I've been working too hard. You know, the legs become quite tense, and it's a feeling which sometimes is very subtle and you may not pick up. then the only reason, the only way to go to sleep if you've got that tightness in the body is to deeply relax all the muscles in the body. And once you deliberately relax all those muscles and the body becomes at ease, it's so easy to go to sleep. With that tightness and tension there, you just can't let go enough to even go into sleep. So how can we expect to get into some meditation peace when our body is also tight and tense? So the first part of our meditation retreat should be to relax our body. In the same way that in, say, an hour's meditation, the first 5 or 10 minutes in my meditation, I focus on just relaxing my body. In the same way, the first part of our meditation retreat should be devoted just to relaxing our body, to making sure our body feels at ease and rested, to give time for that transition from the busy world into the world of peaceful meditation. And for those of you here for the first time, you see the way that we've designed this retreat is to bring comfort to your body. You do have your own rooms. You have a beautiful ensuite in your room. So you can have a nice bed, a good sleep at night, a good shower, tea and coffee and juices whenever you want, good food. It's a very comfortable retreat. And we build it like that on purpose, because that degree of comfort for your body is also how we bring our comfort to our body when we meditate. Look after it. Don't fight it. Don't force it. You just get tight and tense. And when the body really relaxes and you've established the cause of relaxation, which is mindfulness and compassion joined together, please remember that wonderful combination, mindfulness together with compassion. The two together are the trick, the essential ingredients of meditation. Still remember that story which I heard at a meditation seminar in Sydney a couple of years ago. There was a professor from Stanford. He had gotten the money, the funding from this very wealthy university to do an experiment with meditation, to see how relaxed meditators become. But he needed a sort of something to compare it with, a control group. So he sent half of his students to a meditation retreat for a day, and the other half of his students to a spa, a Californian spa for a day. And having half the students returned from a meditation retreat and half the students returned from the spa, he gave them a psychology questionnaire which would tell how relaxed they had become. And of course, what happened was, it was very clear that the people who went to the spa were far more relaxed than the people who had gone to a meditation retreat. And the reason was, it was a meditation retreat which emphasized mindfulness, but not compassion. Which meant that the science was there, they weren't relaxed, they weren't at peace. They'd been struggling and fighting. And that was Professor Philip Golden, I think his name was, from Stanford University in California. And it just shows, just if we don't add the kindness and compassion into our meditation, we won't get that peace, we won't get that relaxation, we won't get that ease, that sense of freedom, which is important to develop our meditation into deep states. And of course, without meditation becoming deep, there's no opportunity to find insights. Yeah, people say they can meditate and have insight into this and insight into that. But those insights are totally superficial. They never go deep enough. They haven't had enough data, enough experience to understand those insights which Buddhism is all about, the enlightening insights. So having understood that from my own teacher, Ajahn Chah, and understood that from the suttas, understood that from my own experience, in this retreat, as in all my retreats, our aim is to take the mind into the deepest states of stillness. And already, I don't call this concentration, because the word concentration, just its meaning in English, implies quite a considerable degree of force and control. Even concentration camps were places where people were controlled and confined. It gives us the wrong sorts of meaning to the word samadhi. So, as you may know, that for many years now I have translated, rendered the word samadhi, this important result of meditation, I've rendered it by the word stillness, not concentration. So if you can make stillness the goal, samadhi, because the Buddha said from that samadhi, from that still mind, only then can you see things as they truly are. When the mind is agitated, you can't see things as they really are. No more than you can see a clear reflection of the full moon at night till there is a full moon or close to a full moon in the sky tonight. If you try and look at a reflection of that moon in the lake, if there's any waves on that surface of lake, you can't get a decent reflection. The reflection is distorted by the waves. In exactly the same way, if your mind is not still, if there are waves of restlessness or thinking on your mind, there's no way that it can reflect the true Dhamma of the Buddha. You needed that degree of stillness, like a lake which is perfectly smooth, the still forest pool, like the mind in samadhi, totally still, not moving. Such a mind perfectly reflects the full moon at night, without any distortion. It reflects the Dhamma, so you can understand these amazing, wonderful, freeing teachings of the Buddha and all the great arahats for the last 25, 26 centuries. So we make stillness the goal. And when we make stillness the goal, it becomes quite clear what the path to such stillness has to be. Anything which agitates the mind, which disturbs it, which creates waves inside of you, is the enemy of stillness. So in order to cause stillness to arise, our job, our task is to be mindful enough to be able to let go, to be so aware that we cease disturbing our own mind. We let things be. We don't fight. We don't control. Because all fight and all control just creates more waves in our minds. It does create more restlessness. But the problem is that the restlessness which has been in our minds for such a long time, it takes an eternity, it feels, for it to calm down, for the waves on the lake to lose their momentum, and for everything to become still again. But you've seen lakes, you know, which are agitated with waves, and you've seen them stir. It does happen, it does work. And all you need to do is to make sure the wind does not blow on the surface of the lake. The winds of craving, of desire and ill will, and trying to get somewhere, trying to do something, trying to achieve things. All those winds, which are like the thoughts and desires and cravings in the mind, those are the things we have to let go of. So there's no more wind, no more craving, no more desire. No place to go, no place to be. Just here. Just being here. Just being here as fully as you possibly can. With kindness. Being here as fully as you possibly can be is called mindfulness. Being kind sticks the attention onto whatever object you happen to be looking at. Just as a mother's love sticks her attention onto the monster that is her baby sometimes. Why? Because that's the job of compassion. Compassion is the glue which sticks the mind onto its object. Ill will and control just moves the mind somewhere else. So please remember that, and always be so kind to every object which arises in the mind. Embrace it, open the door of your heart to it, let it be, and respect it. Kindness also includes respect. Whatever moment you happen to be in, painful or pleasant, hot or cold, sick or healthy, whatever moment you have to deal with, it's already here. Really, you can't fight it now it's arrived. It's too late. So instead of fighting this moment, embrace it. Let it be. Strange thing happens. You know, I know this from experience so often. Sometimes I'm in pain, sometimes I'm sick. But I know now how to deal with that after many years. You embrace that sickness, you embrace that pain. You're just with the unpleasant feeling. And instead of fighting it, instead of trying to get rid of it, you literally just let it be. Not just let it be with compassion and kindness. Similar to that simile of the monster who came into the emperor's palace. And the emperor managed to get rid of that demon, not by saying, get out of here, you don't belong, but by being kind to that monster. In the same way, whatever monster you have in this moment, sickness, pain, tiredness, if you're aware and kind to it, it is the pain which disappears. The discomfort eases off, because the physical feeling is fed by your mental reaction. The more one reacts with negativity, with control, with get out, I don't want you to be here. We call that stress. The mind is fighting the body. Instead we learn how to let go, let it be. Strange thing happens, the pain, the discomfort lessens, it eases. It eases quite considerably, sometimes not totally. But 90% of the pain is mental, always was, always will be. If one can just let things be, totally, with compassion and respect, the monster in the emperor's palace shrinks to such a small size. Even in small matters, small discomforts, whenever I first close my eyes and just be aware of my body, it's never comfortable. It's the nature of a body, especially a body which is getting old and which I work very hard. So when that body is uncomfortable, at first I would find it hard to be in this moment with the body. It's uncomfortable, I'd rather go fantasizing, dreaming, planning, or go out, get up and do something else. But I've learned through experience to be patient. To be patient with the unpleasant feelings. But not be patient in the sense of waiting for them to go. Just waiting in this moment with them. As if I'm with somebody who's upset and they want some counselling. As if you can talk to a person who's just so upset they're shouting, but out of kindness you can be with them. And as you're with a person, counselling them, speaking to them, and they're really, really upset, you find if your attitude is one of respect and kindness, they settle down. Their body language changes, the tone of their voice changes, the whole demeanour softens simply because the way you've related to them. In the same way I found this present moment, no matter what it feels like. If I relate to this present moment with fear or control, or trying to make it different, it gets worse, just like the person I counsel. But if I look at this present moment with a sense of kindness and acceptance and respect, respect for this moment, painful, unpleasant, whatever, I respect it and are kind to it, allowing it to be. And the present moment calms down, it becomes far more bearable, more peaceful, more relaxed. And then you can remain in the present moment with ease. So this is one example among many, which I will repeat many times during this retreat. Don't care what meditation object you follow. I don't care whether you do vipassana, samatha, metta meditation, or whatever meditation you wish to do. But what I would ask you is to do whatever meditation method with the three qualities of letting it be, compassion and gentleness. not just with just a small amount of letting be, with full, total, 100% letting this moment be. And not just with, you know, just a token amount of kindness. Just really open your heart out to this moment. Be just so compassionate to it. Be so full of love. Just to be here with this moment. And be as gentle as the ideal of a Buddha. Someone who will never harm even a fly, literally. And with that type of gentleness and softness and smoothness of character, if you relate to every moment with this full letting it be, with respect, with wonderful compassion to this moment, and with a sense of like thinking of yourself as a Buddha, walking, meditating, doing things so gently, you will find that the body relaxes, the mind relaxes, and all the crazy thoughts which go into mind, which are just a reaction to suffering, it's just an escape because you're not happy being here, that's why we think so much. Then you find the mind will enter the present moment. It will relax into the present moment. It will be effortless in this present moment. And it will be kind. The compassion has been started. And as you go deeper into the meditation stages, the compassion is there to hold you onto the object. You don't hold the object with willpower, not with trying. That's not kind, that's more being a control freak. You hold the object in mind by being kind to it. Compassion is what causes the stillness, not effort. It is the effort to be kind, the effort to be here. I call it the effort to stop, the effort to renounce. But the compassion is the most important part. So be kind to your body, be kind to your mind. And also in this meditation retreat, be kind to all the other people in this retreat. People come from so many different backgrounds. Some people have meditated here for years. Some people are coming on their first retreat and they're learning the ropes from the very beginning. Some people have got a lot of karma from their past. A lot of burdens which they'll take a long time to let go of. Others are relatively free and they can fly high very quickly. So don't compare yourself with those people sitting around you. Don't compare yourself with the monks and the nuns here. There is no comparison necessary. In fact, that really should be the ninth precept. Don't measure other people and don't measure yourself on this retreat. Just be kind and just be. And you'll find that with that degree of awareness and compassion, you get so deep in meditation. Control freak to yourself, you want to sort of get your body into this state or that state. And you've got all these plans and goals for this meditation retreat. First day, have to get first jhana, second jhana, third day, fourth jhana. Fifth day, stream winning. Sixth day, once returning. Seventh day, non-returning. Eighth day, arahat. And the ninth and final day, get the psychic powers. If you have all those plans, then you'd be really stupid. Don't have any plans whatsoever. Just in the world we have plans and schedules. You know what it's, well, you know, many of you know what it's like traveling. You look at the board of when your plane is going to leave and you've got to make sure you get to the gate on time, otherwise they won't let you in and you'll miss your flight and it's very tight and tense. You don't have to fly anywhere for the next 9 days. You don't have to get to work on time. You don't have to make sure you eat your meal before your favorite TV program. You're totally free during this retreat. So enjoy these moments of freedom, of letting go of time, letting go of past and future, so you can stay in the present moment. And just doing that much, and all this restlessness, all this thinking which bothers so many people in meditating. Now, of all the biggest hindrances, you all know thinking is a big one. And sometimes that people just say, how can I stop thinking? How can I stop this crazy mind? Just told you. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle, let things be, wait in the moment. And you'll find with patience the thinking just gets less and less and less until it stops. It's such a beautiful experience to have a mind which can see, which can hear, which can taste, which can know things without needing to give it a name, without having to have a conversation with life or with yourself. You just know. And you live in the world of reality, of experience, rather than this secondary world of thought. It is the thinking part of life which is a fantasy. And much of us, many of us, our understanding, our view of the world is all built up out of thoughts. It is a conceptual world, it's not a real world. So, as we let go of the thinking mind and become more peaceful, as the words tend to disappear and the silence reigns for longer and longer periods, you know, we find that we actually see more, we understand more. It's the thinking which gets you into trouble all the time. All those concepts, all those thoughts and ideas, all those arguments leading from one thing to another, all those rationalizations. You know, there are people who are far more clever intellectually than myself and yourself. And they never get anywhere with all their thinking. And then you come across someone like an Ajahn Chah who'd only learnt 4 years at school. Lucky man, he was only brainwashed in that terrible way for 4 years. And so he could meditate and he could be free. And of course, one of the surprising experiences, for not just for myself, but many other of these Westerners, highly educated Westerners, who went to stay with this person who'd never even graduated past grade 4. Imagine if somebody came to your company or your office and they asked, what are your qualifications, and only finished grade 4, would you give them a job? Would they get employed? If it was an Ajahn Chah, you'd be missing an incredibly wise person. For just 4 years at school, he was incredibly wise. But it wasn't the schooling which made him wise. It was his meditation. It was the great moments, the long hours of stillness. So if you want to solve the problems in your life, if you want to understand how to deal with the pain in your body, if you want to understand the secrets of Buddhism, stop thinking so much. Please at least accept that thinking has not got you anywhere in the past. It's not going to get you anywhere on this retreat as well. So don't trust the thinking mind. Develop distrust to that thinking mind. Distrust it. I remember years ago reading Lord of the Rings, and there was a character in there, I think it was Wormtongue, that's right, Wormtongue. And he was always at the side of one of the kings. Was it the King of Gondor? I've got a good memory for that book. I read that when I was a student at university. The King of Gondor, his main advisor was Wormtongue, who was always next to him, just saying this and saying that. And I always look at any thinking which I have. Ah, Wormtongue, you're sort of deceiving me once again. So shut up, Wormtongue, thinking. And if you can shut up that thinking mind, not only do you have a lot of peace, but all the solutions which thinking promised to give you and never provided, all the solutions are just there for you. You find the solutions in silence, not in thought. So please don't spend these 9 days trying to figure it all out, trying to sort of get the grand plan of Buddhism, trying to sort of get the ultimate thought where everything fits together. It will never fit together that way. You're going on the wrong path of concept. Go on the path of reality. the real world, the real feeling, the real sound, the real knowledge without any words. Words are just like signposts, like the signposts at the end of Kingsbury Drive saying Buddhist Monastery. The signpost is not the monastery, but it points up the hill to where the monastery is. Thoughts, that's all they can do, just point in a direction somewhere, but never mistake the signpost for the destination. Never mistake these words and ideas for truth. So if you can take away your investment in thinking and your belief that thinking is going to provide you anything useful, if you disrespect thinking and you respect silence much more, you value and honour silence, then the quiet mind will stay with you for much longer. And you will know for yourself that all this which I said of wisdom comes from silence. Seeing, real seeing of Dhamma comes when the mind doesn't form even one thought and doesn't give things names, which doesn't start the inner conversation. When the mind is so silent, it sees so much. And there's so much peace come. So much thinking causes so much turmoil in the mind. Thinking disturbs your mind. You know how the Buddha taught it. This was a simile of the Buddha, but it's just so extreme. But the Buddha said this to make a point. He said that thinking is like this. A young man or woman, a young girl going out at night, dressed up in their finest clothes, shampooed, showered, hair all brushed, makeup on if you're a girl, going out at night having prepared yourself, and then somebody comes along and strings a necklace of dead dog carcasses around you, around your neck. You know what a dead dog smells like? Or even like the dead kangaroos every now and again living in the forest. A kangaroo dies somewhere, you can smell its putrefying body. And it's a very disgusting smell. Imagine having one of those dead kangaroo corpses around your neck. That's how disgusting it is and how unclean. And the Buddha said, look at your thoughts like that. Regard your thoughts as dead carcasses being strung around your beautiful mind. Because they are dead. All thoughts are conditioned from the past. It's words that we are taught, concepts which we have learned from long ago. It's dead stuff. Life, reality, the fresh stuff is happening right in this moment. And the thoughts take us to compare this moment to the past. That's what language is, comparing. So when we stop comparing, when we stop thinking, not only do we have incredible peace in our mind, and a sense of the happiness of peace, the beauty of just having a mind which is relaxed, which isn't burdened. I was looking at the thinking as like being an angry boss at work. This mind, this thinking mind, always telling you what to do, giving you more work to do, because thinking creates more work for you. It never solves the work. It just creates more work for you, more things to think about, more problems to solve, more things to worry about. But when that thinking stops, it's like you left work, you're on vacation. You don't have to do things, you don't have to work out the solution to the meaning of life. You have just absolutely nothing to do when thinking stops. If you really want to have a rest, if you want to find some peace, deep, meaningful peace, see if you can let the thinking stop. Make peace with this moment. Be kind with it. Be gentle. And all these waves called thinking on the surface of your mind stop. It is so peaceful, so calm, so beautiful. One of the signs of meditation. It's just one of the side effects. It always comes. It's like the free gift you get in the cornflakes packet. It's happiness. It's a beautiful sense of happiness when the mind becomes calm. That is addictive. But it's a great addiction. It's a positive addiction. It's one of the addictions which the Buddha praised and said, don't be afraid of. The addiction to the happiness of meditation. He said, yeah, give up the addictions to the five senses for the happiness of peace, the happiness of meditation. He said, actually indulge in it. Go for it. If you want to check me out, one such place is in Rana Vibhanga Sutra in the Majjhima Nikaya. Pasadika Sutra in Digha Nikaya says pretty much the same. So when that happiness comes, indulge in it and know where it's come from. It's come from your freedom from thinking, from a mind which is resting, which is at peace. It's a beautiful mind state. And if you think this retreat center is beautiful, you've got a nice beautiful room and a beautiful meditation hall, and the surroundings, even I had a storm the other day, and so it's not as beautiful as it was a week or two ago. But the beautiful mind is the best part of this whole retreat center. So the room is there for your beautiful mind. The hall is here for your beautiful mind. The food is here to get a beautiful mind. A mind which is still, poised, full of peace and kindness. You find that mind will just take you into deep, 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 deep meditations. And sometimes people ask, what should you do? What are the stages of meditation? And those of you who've been here before know, you don't do anything. No more than you do anything when you get on the aircraft. You're the passenger, remember that, not the driver. Get into the present moment, get into the silence. And basically the rest will take over by itself. Yeah, you can watch the breath if you want. Yeah, you can do metta meditation if you want. Yeah, you can scan the body if you want. But a lot of times you just do absolutely nothing. You just stop. Stop all this movement. Stop all these plans. Stop all these strategies and techniques. You just stop everything. And the mind stops moving into past and future, and it stops thinking. It's got nowhere else to go except inwards. So the path of meditation is never onwards. It's never some sort of journey where you always go to the next staging post. This is just standing still and going deeper into this moment. In and in and in and in. Never onwards, always inwards. This is what happens. Silence, right in the middle of now. The breath is right in the middle of the silence. It's a bliss, the beautiful breath. It's right in the middle of the breath. When you get to these incredible lights, limitless, where are they? They're right in the middle of the beautiful breath. The jhanas, they just flower. Just like the flower comes out of the earth. The seeds are already there. The jhanas just emerge out of the ground, the garden, the soil of the nimitta. Like a flower bursting forth. Incredibly beautiful. And also so pregnant with wisdom and insight. Like a gold seam in a mine. Once you hit the seam, you're wealthy, you're rich. Once you hit those jhanas, you'll be wealthy and rich in insight and understanding. So it's actually a very simple path. Yeah, you have obstacles and difficulties because you're stubborn and because, you know, you're sort of bad habits. But with the kindness, following instructions, all those bad habits eventually disappear. And the peace just comes. It's just there. What I really enjoy teaching retreats is when no hopers come on the retreat. People who think they're just totally, novice meditators, impossible. And then they go into a 3-hour meditation. There's just so much bliss and happiness. I wish I could name them. Because if I could name them and you see them and say, wow, them? How could they do it? They're stupid. They haven't meditated as much as I've been meditating. But they actually manage it. What that proves is that everybody can. Not everybody will, but everybody can. You have what it takes. You all have what it takes. But many of you won't use what it takes. You just follow old habits. For those of you who have the guts to let go, and it takes a lot of courage. Those of you who are inspired enough to be kind, 100% kind to this moment, you'll find that everything I said works. You get so peaceful, so still. The mind just goes in and stops. And all these beautiful, amazing things you read about in the texts, all these things say, are there people actually alive today who can get jhana and get enlightened? And you find the answer to that question. Because it's you who get jhana. It's you who get that enlightenment. So you say, yeah. So I want you to do that in this retreat. How? Be kind, be gentle, be in the moment. And you find this amazing energy of this retreat, like a great current of stillness, which is dragging you along. In spite of all of your struggling, it will just drag you into stillness. Because that's the current in this in this retreat center. So those are just a few hopefully encouraging remarks at the beginning of this retreat. Don't expect you to get enlightened today. So don't go pushing yourself and deciding you're going to meditate till midnight tonight. Take it easy. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself time. So that's the introductory talk. Tomorrow morning, again, there's no bells in this retreat center, except every now and again I ring the gong just to start some chanting. Tomorrow morning, what time is the chanting? 6 o'clock or something? I haven't looked at any. Is it 6? Yeah, 6 o'clock is the chanting. So you can do the chanting in your room if you wish. Or you can come out here and do some chanting with us. The breakfast is at 7 o'clock, is that correct? 6:45 breakfast. Oh, that's really early. But as you know, so the breakfast is there, so you don't have to be there exactly at 6:45, 6:50, 7 o'clock, 7:10 or something. As long as you're cleaned up in time, there's plenty of time too. For the talk at 8 o'clock. So just take a right nice rest tonight. If you've got energy, stay up. If you're tired, go to bed. See what time you wake up in the morning. If you wake up and you feel full of energy, meditate. If you feel tired, turn over and go to sleep again. So first couple of days, the most important message is to be kind. Please be kind to yourself. And then you'll find you're starting off the meditation in the best possible way. Okay, is there any questions or comments? Okay, so, if you want to go to bed, go to bed. If you want to sort of meditate, meditate. Is there anything else I should be doing? Don't think so, that's good enough. So, happy retreats. May you all gain jhana, enlightenment, and gain so much psychic powers that when you go back to Singapore or Malaysia, you don't need to go on an aircraft, you can just fly back there yourself.